Hey everyone, I'm Maggie McGrath, the editor of Forbes Women, and today we are talking to Chris Melody Fields Figueredo, the executive director of the Ballot Initiative Strategy Center. Chris, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a busy news week. We have seen news on ballot measures in Florida and in Arizona this week. The Florida Supreme Court allowed two ballot initiatives to move forward, and voters in November will be deciding on the constitutionality of abortion in Florida and also the legalization of marijuana. Meanwhile, in Arizona, abortion advocates are saying that they have enough signatures to put abortion on the ballot in Arizona. Can you give us a 30,000-foot view? What does it mean to you that we have seen this news this week and that these ballot measures are moving forward?
Well, I can share some late-breaking news. I just saw a press release that Nevada is very close. They've reached the over 100,000 mark, which means they are well on their way to having enough ballot measures to get on the ballot this year. So, big picture, right now, where we are in what we call the ballot measure life cycle, right? So this process for citizens to put issues directly on the ballot. So you vote for candidates, and then in some states you also vote for issues. Where we are right now is the qualification phase, which means folks all across the country in states like Florida, Arizona, Nevada, Nebraska, Montana, several states are out there in their communities gathering signatures for petitions to put issues on the ballot this fall. And that's why we're starting to see this momentum right now on getting people moving through the qualification process, because that generally ends the summer, during the summer before an election year, before the November election. So we have enough time for election officials to create those ballots, to educate voters on the issues, and then in the process with Florida, the state Supreme Court or courts may also be a part of that process that may prevent or allow issues to make it on the ballot. So right now we are just in this qualification time where people in their communities are really working hard to make sure the issues that they care about are on the ballot before them in November.
So are these initiatives always citizen-driven, or are there sometimes special interest groups that bring these forward? I guess I'm asking because as a general news consumer, when you see news about a ballot initiative, I think sometimes it's hard to figure out, like, where did this come from?
Absolutely. So I'm a Texan. I grew up in Texas. We don't have the citizen-led process, but that doesn't mean the state legislature can't put an issue before the ballot. And that's actually what we saw this week in Wisconsin too, where for their primary election, the Wisconsin state legislature referred two issues to the ballot. So taking a further step back, about half of the country plus DC has what we call the citizen-led process. That means you, me, members of my community, I now live in Washington, DC, we can go gather signatures and put issues directly on the ballot, whether it's a law through a constitutional amendment, which is really common, or a different type of legislative law, right? That's in about half the country. Any state can actually, through the state legislature, refer an issue to the ballot. That's often for constitutional amendments. So most states will require citizen approval for a constitutional amendment on some issues. That happens across the country. And then if we want to get even more local, you might see it on a municipal, so a city-wide ballot measure, or on the county level as well. That's often much more common across the country, but half of the country, so states like Arizona, California, I think everybody often hears about ballot measures out of California, Florida, often mostly in the western part of the state. That's where the citizen-led process started more than 130 years ago to address the corporate takeover through railroads of state legislatures. That's where you see the majority of them. And then some pockets in the Midwest, the Eastern, and really not a lot in the South.
While we're giving this context, I want to drill into what you just said about 130 years ago. I feel like over the past 2 or 3 years, really ever since Roe v. Wade was overturned by the Dobbs decision in 2022, we have heard a lot about abortion-specific ballot initiatives on even off-cycle elections. In November, for instance, we saw several succeed. But this is not a new phenomenon. It just seems to be used, it's a political lever that's being used more frequently these days. How would you categorize what we've been seeing in the past few years?
You know, I think what we're seeing is a misrepresentation or a lack of representation of what issues people really want to see made changes on. Actually having communities say, I'm not seeing this move through my state legislature. I'm not seeing my city council act on this. We are seeing, you know, issues like raising the minimum wage, Medicaid expansion, voting rights restoration, and obviously now with reproductive freedom after the Dobbs decision, we're seeing people say, wait, I don't agree with what government has said, and they're interfering with the decisions, medical decisions of my body. And so we're seeing, and I think that's become because we're seeing this become a higher level of engagement and conversation through shows like yours, people are saying, whoa, I actually want to have a say in what I can and cannot do in our lives. And really after the Dobbs decision, I think it became very crystal clear for people that government should not interfere in important personal decisions.
Now, to dig into where we are with some of these states, so the Florida Supreme Court issued its decision on both the legalization of marijuana, that ballot initiative, and then abortion access, codifying that in the Florida state constitution. So that's a matter of effectively settled law. Voters will vote. What happens after voters vote? Let's say they vote yes on both.
Mm-hmm. So the process after people vote yes or no, right? Because there may be issues that people are trying to not make become law. Then we move into implementation. And this is actually where courts and the state legislature really are play a critical role, is how those laws will actually be implemented. A very specific example, in 2018, I'll stay in Florida, Amendment 4 in 2018, which was about restoring voting rights for returning citizens, overwhelmingly passed. What happened next in the state legislature is the state legislature interfered and sort of defanged that initiative that voters approved by requiring people to pay all their fines and fees before they could have their rights restored. And so that's why at the end of the day, it's not just about voting on that issue. It's about the work that, I would say that's the starting line sometimes when we think about voting in democracy. That's the starting line, and the real engagement happens with what comes next to make sure that the courts uphold these voter-approved messages, that the state legislatures implement in the ways that voters intended. That's often what will happen next. And so what I will tell everybody is, like, you have to be ready for what comes next. Don't just sit back and say, woohoo, I voted on this issue. There's so much more work that's ahead.
And that's even if there's a yes. So then what happens then, and let's stay in Florida, let's stay on abortion. We saw a double ruling effectively from the Florida Supreme Court this week that while the ballot initiative was allowed to move forward, a 6-week abortion ban will be taking effect starting May 1st. So if the abortion ballot measure does not pass in November, that 6-week ban stays in place. And then what recourse do voters have if they are unhappy with that outcome?
Absolutely. So I really want to, it's important to focus on Florida because it is the second largest abortion provider in the country. 84,000 patients a year. There is simply no other place in the East Coast, in the South, that can intake all of those patients that are seeking medical care. That is why Florida is so critically important. I actually think voters in Florida know that government interference is not what they want in their state, and that this will actually galvanize voters in Florida to make sure that they vote yes in November. What would happen next is they could potentially do another ballot initiative in the future, right? But I actually think what the Supreme Court showed this week is how incredibly important the citizen-led process is in giving us, the people, the power and the agency to make these important decisions that govern our lives.
You said it will galvanize voters, or just generally speaking, and I think the issue of legalization of marijuana has also shown the ability to galvanize voters. So I have a two-part question here. First part, what do you think these ballot initiatives in Florida, or even Florida, Nevada, and beyond, will do for voter turnout in November?
I mean, we've seen it over the last two election cycles on reproductive freedom in 2022 and last year in Ohio. This is an incredibly popular issue. If I can focus on Ohio, typically in Ohio during what is called an off year, an odd year, right? Turnout's about 1 million. In November of last year, 3.3 million voters turned out to vote yes for legalization of marijuana and yes to reproductive freedom. We saw that in states like Kentucky, Kansas, Michigan, right, in 2022, that also passed, either stopped abortion bans or passed reproductive freedom ballot measures. They were often the highest vote getter in a state. And they have transcended party lines. That means independents, Republicans, and Democrats are voting yes for reproductive freedom, and that's true for minimum wage, for voting rights, for redistricting, and for raising the minimum wage and paid leave. So what it really tells us is people are engaged. They are ready to be active participants in our democracy, and they want to see action on these issues that will transform their lives.
So that was part one of my question. Part two hits on something that you just kind of alluded to. It's bipartisan. You're not the first person who's come on this program to say that they're seeing people of so many different political parties voting for certain initiatives. Do you think, based on what you guys are seeing, will these ballot initiatives help President Biden or former President Trump, if you had to make a bet based on where the political winds are shifting?
I think it's really hard to say. However, what I think if we go back to last year in 2023 in the elections, what we saw in states like Kentucky with the re-election of Beshear, what we saw in the Virginia state legislature, when candidates are willing to run on the issue of reproductive freedom, to say the word abortion and say they will protect abortions, people will also turn out for them. We saw that in Michigan too in 2022 with Governor Whitmer, who also ran on reproductive freedom and voting rights when those two issues were on the ballot. So it's not an easy, like, I can tell you this is gonna make sure that President Biden is reelected or Donald Trump. It's really about the candidates, and that's what people want to see. They want to see where these candidates stand on these issues. That's going to be what plays out in November.
Now, you said that the enthusiasm that voters have showed, the numbers at which they turned out in November 2023, shows that people are engaged. So is the increase in ballot and special ballot initiatives, does that indicate that the health of our democracy is strong, or does it indicate the opposite, that there are so many ballot initiatives to introduce certain policies that aren't being passed by state legislatures?
You know, I think we are at a very critical moment in our democracy, and I don't think anyone would disagree. I mean, there's so much polling that is out there. And I think when you talk to people in their communities, that there is dissatisfaction with elections and government. Like, that's real in politics, how it is. It's gotten hyper partisan. over polarized. They're not seeing action on the issues that they care about. But what we are seeing is people that are excited about and say they want to see action, and these issues, these ballot measures, are really, to me, a path forward to what I believe is incredibly important, is collaborative governance, that us, the citizens, play a critical role with our representatives and government to make sure that we are in partnership and relationship, and the responsibility that our elected officials are to represent us. That, to me, is, in a time where there's so much anxiousness about the health of our democracy, to me, what we have is an opportunity to engage and get people excited about something that they haven't felt is very effective for them. So to me, that's the path forward, and the biggest bridge we have to reinstate and build a democracy that truly represents and is of, for, and by the people.
So ballot measures, ballot initiatives are the path to democracy, a better democracy. We've been talking about Florida and a little bit of Arizona. You mentioned Nevada. Where else are you looking? Where else should folks who are interested in this issue be focusing their attention on over the next few months?
Absolutely. So we could see as many as 13 reproductive freedom ballot measures this year. So states like Montana are gathering signatures, Colorado, actually in the state of Maryland, you already have it on the ballot. It was a legislatively referred measure. And in New York, there's an equal rights amendment style ballot measure, which goes a bit more broad to have also protections for LGBTQ plus people, as well as pregnancy outcomes. States like Nebraska, South Dakota, and Arkansas, they're all considering. And there's states like Missouri that are moving forward with paid leave and raising the minimum wage, similarly in Nebraska. So there are issues that are going to be before voters in many, many states, and that's something that people really can get excited about.
So I said that it feels like we've seen a lot of these ballot initiatives and more of them in recent years. Is there pushback on this increase? I think I also saw a headline that said something to the effect of some states are fighting ballot measures with their own ballot measures, which feels a little counterproductive. But what is the state of things there? Are we going to see a reversal and a retrenchment in the number of ballot initiatives in future years?
Yes. I mean, ballot measures about ballot measures. That's a bit confusing to people, right? It's like, wait a minute, what? But yes, as we have seen, popular issues like reproductive freedom, like raising the minimum wage, right? All those issues I've talked to you about. We've also seen what you just said, pushback to that change. So state legislatures refusing to implement voter-approved initiatives like Medicaid expansion, Missouri, that happened in 2020. We still haven't seen the full implementation of reproductive freedom in Ohio, even though they just did this in 2023. And then we've also seen bills that get legislatively referred to the ballot to make it harder for citizens to have the citizen-led process, from raising the threshold to pass a ballot measure to having very specific details about who and how and when you can collect those signatures. That is the pushback that we are seeing. And what is interesting about this, similarly to what we're seeing about what is appealing to voters when you talk about what's happening around the rollback on abortion rights, it's a similar message to them about the interference of ballot measures too. Again, people want to make change, and they don't want government to interfere in their ability to make decisions and changes in their community.
Excellent. Well, we will be watching all those races very, very closely, all those states very closely. Chris, thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate you coming on.
Thank you for having me.